So our theme continues to be change your words, change your life this summer. And today we are talking about being self-controlled and self-disciplined. So I was trying to come up with an image that shows what that looks like to be self-controlled and self-disciplined. So let's see what you think. That's a pretty determined dog, I would say, to have a hot dog on its nose. I mean, look at those eyes, very, very focused. So ready, but I know that he or she is probably waiting for that command to be released in order to eat that hot dog. Now, if you are a dog lover at all or have dogs in your house or neighborhood, you know this is a difficult task to teach a dog. My dog Lucy could never do it. She does not have the self-discipline, nor do I, to even teach her how to be that patient and wait. So I was Googling this week what it looks like to be self-disciplined and self-controlled. And all of the stuff that came up were a lot of those self-help things. They talked about your diet or the spending of your money or how you accomplish a goal. All of these things to be self-controlled and self-disciplined. To be this renewing of the mind, I would suspect. And all of these things take a lot of practice. I would imagine that dog and owner took a lot of practice and a lot of eaten hot dogs before they actually accomplished this goal. So what does it look like when we talk about being self-controlled and self-disciplined in our faith life with our words and our actions? What does that look like? So we talk about our theme this week, and our verse comes from 2 Timothy chapter 1. Where it says, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear and timidity, but of power, love, and self-discipline." The context of this one verse is at the beginning of this letter, this book in our Bible. And it's based in the context that the writer is saying to Timothy, "I know the faith of your grandmother, Lois. And I know the faith of your mother, Eunice. And so I can suspect and know your faith as well. Through you imitating what your previous generations believe and do." And so you are not given this power, this spirit for fear and timidity, but you're given this power for love, for self-discipline, for self-control. So that, it goes on to say, you can proclaim the gospel. That's the context of where we take this theme verse today. So what does it mean, again, to be self-disciplined and self-controlled? I wonder if we could ponder the word surrender. If you're in the habit of writing a word on the card that you are given, you may want to write that word on the back and ponder what this word means when it comes to our life, when it comes to our faith. How do we surrender our words? What does that look like as we practice and learn self-discipline? Surrender. I've been talking a lot lately about my call story, and part of my call story is my home congregation pastor. Her name is Pastor Teresa. She was a big part of me learning and practicing what it means to be a woman of faith, let alone a female preacher. And so I will never forget one summer that she had this confrontation with someone in the congregation. Now, that someone just happened to be my mother. My mother was the be-all volunteer in this small church in Lee, Nebraska, was involved in everything, and she became known as the VBS tyrant. Like, VBS, yeah, no kidding. VBS had to, you know, run a certain way so that everyone could have a wonderful experience. These certain things had to happen. Well, the Sunday before VBS this particular summer, things were not going the way my mother had projected. And so after worship, she had a few words with Pastor Teresa. And let me tell you, all 150 of us in worship that day watched her have these very flamboyant, loud words, yelling at Pastor Teresa that things were not in order the way they were supposed to be. How were these children to ever experience VBS if these things did not happen in this certain way? Now, I watched Pastor Teresa during that conversation. This woman had some self-discipline and self-control. And I believe she surrendered in that conversation. Because, you know, when someone is in your face and yelling at you, I often have the response of, I want to fight back. And I want to tell him what I believe to be true. Pastor Teresa stood there. No facial expressions, just listened. And when she got done, I do believe that she apologized to my mom for no apparent reason. Just apologized, and we moved on. And VBS was fabulous that week, I'm sure. But somewhere in her spiritual discipline, she decided she was not going to fight with the VBS tyrant. She was going to surrender. Because whatever my mom needed to get out, she needed to get out. And Teresa was the target. That's some self-discipline. That's some self-control. That is surrendering, I think. So what does that look like in our words and our actions? So we come to the gospel story today, one of my favorite miracles in all of the gospels. It's a miracle, you hear it 6 times in the gospels. There's only 4 gospels. So 2 gospels tell it twice. Must be pretty important. And it's one of my favorite things that Jesus does in showing this divine compassion, this love knowledge in passion lived out for all people, generosity and abundance in a life where people were thinking scarcity. Now here's this story where people were gathering in large crowds because they were following something different. They wanted something amazing in their lives. And Jesus, trying to get away, sees that's not possible. So did you hear when Kathy read, he already knew what he was going to do, but he still included the disciples in the process. He still asked them, how are we going to be able to feed all 5,000 of these people? Well, I can just imagine those disciples saying, Jesus, come on now, I cannot solve this. There is no HEB around the corner. We do not have money for this either. We don't know what to do. That's the reality that was spoken. And then there was something else that happened. One of the disciples, Andrew, had found a boy that had some stuff, had some bread, had some fish. And somehow, those pieces fed everyone. Somehow, in that little boy's excitement to be part of something bigger, he's brought everything he has and says, I have enough. Here, share this. Do whatever you need to do with this. And feed these people because I want to be part of something greater. Imagine the faith and the wonder of that little boy. And what that looked like for the disciples. For these 5,000 people, how might we imitate that faith? What does it look like for a child to surrender? Let's take a look.
Okay, you over there and you over here. Let's see, I'll help you. Here, we're gonna take some photos, but the problem is the photographer is late. I'm gonna look for the photographer and then we'll take the photos. Meanwhile, you can have a snack, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm gonna go and I'll be back in 5 minutes. Okay? Okay? Here I go, count to 3.
1, 2, 3. There.
Those children knew how to surrender. Yes, we know that we learned how to share in kindergarten, but I think that there is something more to this. and the pure joy in their faces, the giggles, the wonder, the excitement. What does that look like to surrender, to share what you have, to share your passion when it comes to this love knowledge that we know the divine shares with us? What does that look like in our lives, to surrender? Or what does it even mean to surrender? I was meeting with my spiritual director this week. She's one of the sisters down at the Cenacle in Houston. And she was talking about her order of sisters and how they were developed. And she was talking about with me about surrendering. And what does it look like to surrender? What do you surrender to? And when I said, what do you surrender to? She said, Jennifer, I need you to rethink that. To whom do you surrender? Not what, but whom. What does that look like? She says that the sister that was part of the origination of her order, St. Teresa Kordek, about in 1864, was talking about surrendering. And she wrote a book about it, where she talked about surrendering being adhering to everything, accepting everything, submitting to everything. And that surrendering is more than devoting oneself or giving oneself or abandoning oneself to God. It's more about surrendering is to die to everything. And when you die to everything, that means that you are turning toward God. She said, so often in life, we think about when we are following God, we are behind God. God is already going before us. Or we are running away from God because we don't necessarily want to have God in this situation. And she said, what would it be like if you surrendered and turned yourself toward God? What would God say to you in that situation? What does that type of surrender look like? When you surrender to that passion, to that love knowledge that God gives us. This God of provision, this God of abundance. In 1946, Agnes Gonta Bhutai, anybody know who she is? Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa surrendered to the faces, the masses of suffering people, and created a charity, a life of passionate love knowledge. Surrendering to what God had to share. In 1973, Millard and Linda Fuller, any idea what they created? Were the original people that started Habitat for Humanity International because they saw a need for affordable housing for the working poor. Out of a passion, out of a surrender to God, out of a surrender to that love knowledge, they started something that is still in existence and growing today, helping people be in a home, creating a life for a family. What does that look like for us to share our passion and live into that love knowledge? So this last week, this congregation sent 23 youth and 5 adults to Detroit, to the National Youth Gathering to hang out with about 30,000 other teenagers. If you followed it at all on Facebook, you knew that it was quite an ordeal. There was a lot of orange t-shirts and a lot of neon-colored t-shirts all over the place. Well, the day that we were expected to proclaim justice, to be out in a neighborhood working, building something, painting something, getting our hands dirty, doing some work, some service work, we were prepared for that. It ended up being something different. Because you see, what happened in Detroit is we had to wait for buses a lot because we were bused everywhere in the city. So that morning, I think we waited about an hour for the bus to come to our hotel. And then we got to the location we were supposed to be at on time. And then we waited, I think it was about 4 hours, with about 8,000 other teenagers waiting to go out into the community. So then we get on our bus with the expectation to go and work. And we get to our site, and the kids wait another hour or so because there was no work leader, project manager, there was no equipment, There was a lot that we were supposed to work at, but no project. So the day that we were building up to have such a great day of service became a long day of waiting. So one of the adults on the bus got on Yelp because it was also 2 o'clock in the afternoon and none of the kids had eaten. So we had kids from Texas and Georgia on the bus, 45 of us, who hadn't eaten since 7 a.m. Okay, if you know anything about teenagers, we're hungry by now. And if you know anything about teenagers, we're kind of tired of waiting as well. So we have these two big factors. So on Yelp, we found a local establishment and ended up at Knowledge Cafe, where we met Nandi. Nandi, one of the adults called her and said, "We have about 45 people. Can you accommodate us?" "Yes. How far away are you?" 10 minutes. Click. Great. So we're on our way. We get there, and we find out that it is a bookstore. Right? It's a bookstore with a couple of tables for people to sit at, and then there is a room right next door that had a bunch of chairs and kind of an open mic area, and there's a little space downstairs as well. So we come to learn about Nandi, all sorts of things about what she believes to be community. This is a woman who has lived her life in Detroit, and Detroit is her home. No matter what has happened, Detroit is her home. And we learned from Nandi that she was shocked to see white people in her restaurant. "Why would a bunch of white people choose a black establishment?" she said. She also told one of the other leaders that we were the first white people to be in her restaurant. This is 2015. A new experience for this woman. An experience that our kids had to learn how to surrender that afternoon, that evening, as we processed what happened that day. To surrender what we believe to be service to something different for this woman, who learned that we do want to invest in your life, we do want to accompany you, and be a fellow Christian in faith. This woman opened up her restaurant with one fryer and fed all 45 of us deep fat fried food. It took us 2 hours, but it was fantastic. It's probably one of the best meals we had because of this woman and what she shared with us. And what we learned about her later, because God loved Google, we found out some of the things that she does in her place, being the hub of the community, not only owning Knowledge Cafe, but the hookah bar next door, and then the vintage store next door to that. So this whole block is where the community gathers. And I tell you, the community came out. About 10 to 15 people wanted to come out and see what all these white people were doing in this restaurant. I mean, what the heck? So as together we surrendered who we are as people, we came to learn that Nandi is the hub of this community, that she gathers once a month with all the people in her community, and they have a meal. They throw in $5 to vote on a project that they're going to complete in their community. Whether that's painting or building a park or fixing a building or whatever it might be, the projects are voted on. Nandi gives all this food to be able to gather in together. Whoever's vote wins takes that money and starts that project. And then the community comes along to help. Surrendering to create something new. Surrendering to that passion. Surrendering to that love knowledge. What does that look like in our lives? What does that look like in the life of this church, in the life of this community? Because as we surrender, we're going to learn a whole lot about ourselves, about God, and about one another. What is surrender for you?